The views expressed on The Final Straw do not necessarily represent the views of the producers, Asheville FM, WSFM LP, or Friends of Community Radio.
Listening to WSFM 103.3 in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursa Goodness.
And I'm William Goodenough.
The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRSLP in Columbus, Ohio, as well as Berkeley Liberation Radio in Berkeley, California. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org for all of time. You can email us at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net with anything, and you can send us snail mail at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806.
The show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee, located at 610 Haywood Road. Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat underground and independent literature. Firestorm's full catalog of books and zines can be found online at firestorm.coop. This week we spoke with Bobby C. Billy and Shannon Larson of the Resist 450 Coalition. This coalition is set up to protest the so-called 450th commemoration celebration to be held in St. Augustine, Florida, at the beginning of September, which will mark the 450th anniversary of the settling of that city by Juan Ponce de Leon and Pedro Menendez, colonizers from Spain. In this interview, we will talk about indigenous struggle in St. Augustine, the doctrine of discovery, the action camp, which will occur on September 5th through 8th, and much more. To get involved with the action camp or to donate to this cause, you can see all the information you'll need at resist450.org.
Additionally, this week we have an audio segment from our comrades at A-Radio Berlin, Anarchistisches Radio Berlin, which can be found at aradio.blogsport.de. That's blogsport. Did this interview with the UK-based organizer from Reclaim the Fields Initiative, and they talk about the planned international camp in North Wales, the relationship of food sovereignty and the prison system, and the topic of prison abolition as such. You can send these folks feedback and comments at aradio-berlin@riseup.net. So thanks to these comrades for sharing this audio. Stay tuned for more from A Radio Berlin next week.
In a bit of news, the trial of the Taranak 8 is set to begin soon, minus the charges of terrorist association. The Taranak case stems back to 2009 in Taranak, France, the site of a farm commune on which 9 folks were arrested and accused of attempting sabotage on a high-speed rail line. The case allegedly also linked the arrested, including Julien Coupat and Yildun Levy, to the publishing group The Invisible Committee. The Invisible Committee, which recently published To Our Friends, is in the lineage of Tycoon magazine, of which Coupat was a founder.
A Virginia anarchist by the name of Stephen Loffman was arrested a week after attending the anti-KKK rally in Columbia, South Carolina on July 18th. Stephen's cell phone was dropped, and he was arrested when he attempted to pick it up from the department of Sheriff Leon Lott. Stephen Loffman's being accused of attempting to incite hatred against the KKK, yelling profanity at the white supremacists, and being in traffic. He's being smeared in local media by the sheriff also of being a career troublemaker traveling across state lines who is attempting to incite the crowd to riot. He sounds like a pretty stand-up guy to us. You can find out more and support Stephen by visiting http://gofundme.com/e6b3tukuc.
But first, some words from anarchist prisoner Sean Swain.
What you say, what you say, what you say, what? We're calling like a war!
Two major events happened to the Ohio Department of Retribution and Corruption this past week, both representing serious challenges that confront the prison industrial complex long into the future. One of the events caught the attention of mainstream media, while the other didn't. The first major event occurred at Mansfield Correctional Institution. A drone dropped a load of drugs onto the prison yard, which really is an event all in itself. And then prisoners who witnessed the drug drop caused a riot, fighting over the dope. Yeah. dropping a load of drugs onto a prison yard has the same disruptive effect as throwing dollar bills from the balcony out over the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. This is the first time, to my knowledge, that authorities have documented a drone making a delivery to a prison. That's not the same as saying it was the first drone delivery. Very possibly, drones have been employed in this fashion for quite some time. And quite frankly, with the proliferation of drones everywhere, even to deliver pizza, drone deliveries of all kinds to prisons are simply the new normal. I mean, think about it. The fences are only so high, and you can't put a dome over every prison in the United States. Prisons were not built to defend against miniature air raids. And the new technology applications leave the sprawling U.S. prison complex completely vulnerable. How long before drones deliver duffel bags of assault rifles and bolt cutters and explosives? How can a prison complex defend against a technology that can deliver an automatic rifle right to a cell window? It can't. The second event that happened at the Ohio Department of Retribution and Corruption got less attention than the drone, but might have an even greater devastating long-term impact. Someone left anonymous postings at blastblog.noblogs.org. According to Deputy Director Voorhees, who came to SOCF to speak to me directly about this event, the postings include home addresses of prison officials and even photos of their homes. That's a big deal. Big enough, in fact, that the second in charge of the ODRC hierarch food chain came here because he thinks this event somehow involves me. And yet, I'm not in the hole or beaten up or tossed onto a bus back to the Super Duper Max. It's a big enough deal that the fascist police state has not employed its typical violence, but instead relies on its interpersonal communication skills training to try to get me to disavow those postings and persuade whoever posted them to take them down. Now, to be clear, I didn't post that information online. I have no computer, no internet access, no cell phone to take photos of fascist homes. And if I did, I certainly wouldn't hop back over the fence and return to my cell. So I didn't do it. And I really have no idea who did. Anyone with the skills to anonymously post information online certainly wouldn't send me monitored snail mail with their real name and the return address, letting me know they did it. That's ridiculous. But what I do know is when Federal Judge Benita Pearson's address got posted, my legal counsel suggested that I write a statement for posting, asking that her address be removed. My attorney felt that would be beneficial since he was entering into negotiations for settlement of my 12-monkey frame-up lawsuit. So I wrote the statement, and, surprisingly, the posting vanished, seemingly in response to my request. Deputy Director Voorhees wants me to draft a similar statement to have prison fascist addresses removed. I've consulted my attorney on this, and it appears that he will probably be able to get to drafting that statement after he finally resolves the 12-monkey frame-up. So once we put the civil action behind us and get the relief we need, we can look into the matter of possibly helping prison officials who participated in torturing me and try to get their addresses removed. But in the meantime, I think we have to acknowledge that these postings greatly increase the chances of property damage to the homes and cars at those addresses. Has anyone called or emailed the major insurance providers, Allstate, State Farm, Prudential, to alert them of those postings? Someone certainly should. Insurance providers need to calculate this new risk and probably raise the premiums for anyone they insure at those addresses. At any rate, these are two events. The drone drop and the posting of prison fascist home addresses that signal the beginning of a new era where the police state is ill-prepared and overwhelmed, unable to face the challenges that confront it. It's a brave new world. This is anarchist prisoner Sean Swain from the Southern Ohio Correctional Facility at Lucasville. If you're listening, you are the resistance.
You can write to Sean Swain at Sean Swain 243-205, P.O. Box 45699, 1724 State Route number 728, Lucasville, Ohio 45699. To read some of Sean's writings and learn more about his case, check out seanswain.org.
So the first question I have is, would you introduce yourselves and talk a little bit about what you do?
Yes, we will. I'm Shannon Larson with Ancient Trees, and I generally work on environmental and environmental justice issues. I also have been somewhat involved with indigenous rights issues with my work with Bobby C., which has included repatriation issues and land right issues, and we're currently struggling with the National Park Service rule and are working very hard to stop the River Grass Greenway project going through the Everglades and Big Cypress National Preserve. So our work is very varied, but mostly centered on protecting the natural areas and natural systems and wildlife and their ancestral grounds. Bobby is, of course, a clan leader and a spiritual leader for the Council of Original Miccosukee Seminole Nation. So I'm going to let him further introduce himself.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. The reason she's doing that for me is because I never went to school or don't know how to read and write. Sometimes I have trouble pronouncing English words in my language, so you're going to hear that. But if you don't understand what I'm saying, ask again.
Thank you for that. I hear you. I hear you loud and clear.
There's two tribes here, which is called a federally recognized tribe, which is Seminole tribe. Incorporated in Miccosukee Tribe Incorporated, and I'm not part of it. We never agreed selling the land or selling anything what God has created it. So we still live trying to live on what God has gave us, which is we call the natural law. And with that, we have problem with the people celebrating Bonstimian and Pedro Hernandez, because they came and slaughtered us and stealing our rights and our land. And kill a lot of our people and babies and childs and older and elders and so on. So we have a lot of concern with what the St. Augustine doing.
You touched a little bit on it, Bobby. Would you tell listeners about the so-called 450th commemoration event, which will be held by the city of St. Augustine, Florida, in September? And will you talk a little bit about how it's being marketed and what are the main objections that you both have to the event?
Right now we have a flyer and a media release and our mission statement that we've been sending out. And we also have the website, resist450.org, that anyone can go to, where we've posted the flyer, which is a call to action. And it also explains pretty much what will happen from September 5th to the 8th of this year, 2015. We started actually quite a few years ago trying to sit down and talk to the city of St. Augustine, the mayor, and the commissioners. And again, recently with a group called the Compassionate City People, who were also reluctant to hear what we had to say, as well as the commissioners and the mayor. So they have held steadfast to the celebration, which includes the reenacting of the landing of Pedro Menendez, and it includes the mass, a reenactment of the mass that was held for him by the Catholic priest at that time. We'll further include a celebration with a big birthday cake and also another mass where they'll be, I understand, if we can believe them, bishops and archbishops, and it'll be a closed mass at the Catholic Cathedral, which the public can view from a screen outside. In relationship to all of those, our main objection is the fact that these two people, well, right now we're focusing on Pedro Menendez, did horrific crimes against the indigenous people of that time. And they should not be celebrated. And as Bobby says, they're bringing the past back, all of that past pain and suffering. And we've asked them not to do that on many occasions. I know we also have concentrated on an effort called Tear Down the Fort, which is the facility San Marcos for, we call it a prison, because back in the time when General Jackson was bringing all the people, gathering them up to relocate them, a lot of people were marched or taken by rail cars from out west and brought to the facility San Marcos, as well as Seminole people. And what happened there was not nice. And what Seminole people. And what happened there was not nice. It was no hotel, as Bobby Billy has said. You can imagine the temperatures there during the summertime with no windows, very little sanitation, and mistreatment. We don't want people to come thinking they're going to take the fort down. We want the people, the federal government, to take that fort down and replace it with original structure. We hope to be present at every single event that takes place on September 5th to the 8th, to be there with posters and banners denouncing all this. And also we asking the priests and the archbishops that are going to be in the town at that time to rescind the doctrines of discovery, which is still how the United States bases its relationship with indigenous people today. We're asking them to rescind the doctrine of discovery and embrace the United Nations Declaration of Rights on Indigenous People, and to honor that. So we have a lot of work to do, and this isn't the end of it. We will continue our efforts and all of the efforts that I just explained. We're asking that people come to work together to promote a healthy relationship with each other and the natural world based on truth, respect, and peace. So our actions are not going to be to provoke someone being arrested, because that kind of conflict was happening at that time. We don't want to continue killing or that type of thing, conflicts of any kind. We're going to be there to bring awareness that this is wrong and the change needs to take place. So I'm going to let Bobby C. Billy now say his thoughts on this.
It's not really my thought. It's a fact. We've been living generation to generation over 500 years, and the United States never honored the people living here when they came, and we're also helping them, taking care of them when they first arrival in our land, and they don't know who they are. They don't have nothing when they came to our land, but yet they're still abusing us, and no apologizing or celebration or anything about our people. And that's another thing. We will challenge them, this celebration of the 450. And these Spanish people, they're trying to celebrate. They didn't born here. And they born in another country. When they came, they killed our people. And they left this country and they died somewhere else. Why they want to celebrate it? They're not born in this country. So not only that, the Christian people using that to the name of the God and killing other people, stealing other people's land and belong them. So to me, the way we believe our way of life and the Creator's gift, and they said they're not killed, they're not stealed, they're not lied. And that's exactly what the United States doing. And not only that, the fourth, when the visitors come, they didn't tell the truth.
Yeah.
All that, what they have done to us. And they teach them how great this fort did their freedom. That's all we tell them. Mm-hmm. And they always said their freedom of the land, but stealing of the land, mm-hmm. That's what we see. And the United States has to wake up to tell the truth, what they have done to people living in this land. We still live in it. So that's why we're concerned about all these things, because for once, the United States has to speak the truth. As long as you're using it under the God's name. As soon as they put that aside, how do you say that in the court, the freedom of tribulation under the flag above all. But they say all that. There's no justice in the United States and our people. And for once, they need to speak the truth with the speak of the tongue.
I didn't know that the 450th so-called commemoration ceremony was going to be commemorating essentially like the opening of a prison. Did I understand you correctly?
It's basically commemorating the founding of the first settlement in the United States.
Okay.
But includes, and that was done by Pedro Menendez, so they are honoring and glorifying him and reenacting the whole situation of him coming in his little boat and landing and then reenacting the mass that was held for him. They have continued to honor him at gala parties by having someone dressed up as Pedro Menendez, sitting at the heads of the table, and that kind of thing.
That just seems so immensely disrespectful. I don't even understand how they're justifying this at all. I understand also that for the 500th, there was a 500th anniversary some years ago in St. Augustine, and what was that met with some resistance as well locally?
It was called Viva 500, and we did attend most of the sessions that they had. It was spread out throughout Florida with different activities, and yes, when they did the Viva 500 symposium, Bobby and myself and a Navajo from Arizona attended, passed out a huge packet to everyone in attendance and all of the people that presented. So we did try our best to educate them on what they were also celebrating and commemorating was incorrect and inappropriate.
I was wondering if you wouldn't mind, for the benefit of those listeners who are unaware, if you wouldn't mind just telling people more about the doctrine of discovery that the Resist 450 coalition in part is protesting?
It's really, the doctrine of discovery has become one word, or those two words, to describe the papal bulls that started way back in, I believe, the 1400s. And in those were directed by the Pope in how the new lands would be handled, what would happen, and they were directives that said any lands we give you the right to take if they're not Christianized already and if they do not belong to Portugal. So in the beginning, it seems like Spain and Portugal respected each other's land rights, but any land that did not belong to Portugal or that was not already Christianized could be taken in whatever manner necessary by people like Pedro Menendez and certainly many other of these explorers and conquistadors that came. And if the people that were living there would submit and become Catholic and under the submission of whatever commander or general was present at that time that came in to occupy the land, their lives would be spared. But if they did not, they would be met with terrible deaths. And that's exactly what happened. And I really, you know, look at people when they talk about the Mission Indians and how they became Catholics. You see a lot of that around St. Augustine. But they had no choice. It was either or not. You're either do it or you're dead. So basically, that's what all of that group together now has been called the Doctrine of Discovery. And it's still kind of the same mentality held today, and like a directive still that is followed by the United States government.
Absolutely. Thank you for speaking a little bit about that. And also, as Bobby C. Billy said a little bit while ago, people who were here before that are still living here, and the concept of discovery itself is, to my mind, extremely racist and extremely disrespectful to the people who were already living here. Thank you for talking about that a little bit.
Yes, but I think I explained to you a little bit about the connection she was talking about. what we understood when they came to kill most of it, to be able to use that to Christianize, maybe 50 or 100. That's all they saved them, to be able to use that. So beyond that, they killed most of the indigenous people they found. So that's why they're not telling the truth what they did at that time.
We'll also be talking a lot about during the camp and elsewhere about the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, because in that there are very specific directives that each government should be following, and the United States did support that. President Obama did support that document. However, we see no evidence of any action towards that, and certainly not here in St. Augustine. So we're also going to be focusing on that. So it's a time to bring out all these different issues, and we hope that others will join us on that and push that 1513 requirement.
Revolution of the Christian.
So I know what Bobby C. Billy is talking about now. There has been a large movement, particularly with the Episcopal Church, has actually done a resolution along with the Methodist Church, quite a number of the other Quakers, to asking that the doctrine of discovery be rescinded. Oddly enough, in St. Augustine, we met with the Episcopal Church there, and we didn't really feel at the time that they were very open to do that, but we sent out to 80-plus churches a huge packet of 32 pages with all the resolutions from the other churches and Bobby's statement about the doctrine of discovery. And finally, the Episcopal Church contacted us and said they were doing something and they were going to write a column in the local newspaper. However, what they were going to write, I found arrogant and disrespectful. So there has been little change in St. Augustine, whereas other churches, the Episcopal Church and in other places, have begun working on that issue.
Shannon, you mentioned a little bit about this before, but could you talk about the Resist 450 Coalition and a little bit about the Action Camp, which will be held from September 5th through 8th. I remember seeing some sort of like tentative schedule for the camp on a WordPress website. What are your hopes for the camp, and who do you hope will attend?
We hope as diverse a group of people come together, and individuals and organizations. The camp, to me, will be a place where we can be creative and innovative on the actions that we're going to take. I kind of have an idea of what they should be, as long as they're nonviolent and are not risky that would cause anyone to have a conflict with the police. The police in St. Augustine and the city of St. Augustine are very, very rough.
Yeah,
also, the fort is under federal jurisdiction and is owned by the federal government. So I am not encouraging anyone to do any actions, direct actions, risky actions in that whole scenario as well. We can make our presence there known at the fort in a way that gets the message across without engaging with the police and getting anyone arrested. I will assure you no one wants to go into the St. Augustine prison or jail. Everyone in that city is so excited about this event. So we do have to use a little degree of caution. I think our camp is going to be a time for all of us to come together, all of us that are like-minded in all of this as far as this issue and what is happening also across the United States to many indigenous people. How can we work together? To me, that was the most important thing, for us to be at the camp, form solidarity, form agreements, how we can work together to not only help in this situation, but across the United States, indigenous people are under attack. And non-Indian people and indigenous people need to come together to support each other. So I'm hoping that this will be a large part of our camp. I know that some of the Earth people are planning some type of training and action training. And since I've never been through it, I can't explain that. Yeah.
And there are some demonstrations planned, right? I saw on the website the schedule for it. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to be demonstrating, as I said, at all of the events that will be taking place. We'll be demonstrating at the enactment of where they actually land. We'll be demonstrating at the fort. We'll be demonstrating at the mass that's going to be held, and we'll be demonstrating when they do their gala birthday party. We intend to also demonstrate at the city hall as well. So every day we will have a demonstration to make our presence known that this, what they're doing, is totally inappropriate, disrespectful, and disgraceful.
Agreed. Since this is definitely not the first of its kind to happen in St. Augustine or in Florida specifically, and certainly not the first in the country, I was wondering if you could say a few words, like both of y'all say a few words about, specifically about Indigenous people's presence at the demonstrations and in the action camp, and about any specific Indigenous struggles in St. Augustine, just to place this event within that very important context.
I'll let Bobby speak to that, since I am not Indigenous. He can speak very well to the long history he's had with the city of St. Augustine.
Thank you to allow us to speak on the air. We are peaceful people and a humble people, and that's what these people are when it came to our land. And the Indians covered it. They came lost, and they don't have nothing. They were hungry, and they were thirsty, and they don't have no clothes at all when they arrived at our land. So we took them in. And we were people, teach them how to dress and teach them how to live, make the shelter, and then it's how to plant gardens and all that. So later on, and they developed so fast, and they turn around on us. So in the beginning, we thought it was a human being, but later on, we don't know who these people are, because they seem to be speaking about God and Jesus and all. We understand that. Who they are in here, how he wants us to live on this creation. It doesn't belong to us, it belongs to the God and Jesus. So we don't buy it, we don't own it. We part of the earth, and we understand Creator, the Creator God out of the earth, that's why we call it on the earth. So that's what one of the things we struggle with, the Christian people pray to God and go to church all the time and turn around and lie and steal and cheat. So we hurt by that all the time, and not only just in Florida and throughout the United States. And at that time, a lot of some of our people in the prison, so some of them went into trying to save them. So all of those things, the history has been told to us on the indigenous side, but never been told. And that's why we know the Park Service people maintain the fort. It's not telling the truth. And not only that, it's throughout the country. And they're not telling us about our people, what they've done to them. So now it has to be, indigenous people have to be stand for it needs to be survival, not only us, but also non-Indian people. And what they're doing in the environment, there's no hope anymore. It's like building highways and building cities and everywhere, and that natural environment disappeared. Because of that so-called plan of the United States or American or something like that. And it just made up, and that's just a dream and just imagination. So we tell them people, hurry up and wake up before you destroy the future of life. Because the earth is alive, the same as our body, because it comes from the earth. So that's how much we connected with the way that God has taught us. So we have to be careful what we take, and we have to, in return, So basically, we become healthy between the earth and us. So that sense, the so-called modern life is not connecting that anymore. And that's what's killing our people, not only just indigenous people, even non-Indian people throughout the world. So that's one of the things we're fighting for protecting the future of life for all creation. Because when we see, open up that what Pedro Mendes and Pantilian did in the beginning of that time, we don't want to see that thing over and over and over. It needs to be stopped, to become peace with the Mother Earth. Right now, the American people and the other people using advantage of that, killing the future with it, which is digging up the oil and digging up all the other things under the earth, and also creating a concrete, they won't grow, killing that, put them on the bottom of the Mother Earth, disappearing. Something needs to be low to produce the food for the future of generations. So, and that's how much we see, not only just that hope, it needs to be celebrated. It needs to celebrate what God has gave us. He's become us. People need to become a human being, really, to identify himself who they are, what they're supposed to act to in the Mother Earth, not the concrete or the money. So that's the biggest thing for population growth. But that's the biggest thing today.
William, I just also add that the city of St. Augustine sits on top of an entire indigenous town, and also it is, there are very few places within the city limits that there are not ancestral burials. So every time they decide to do something there is always the risk and very often discovery of Aboriginal indigenous remains. And Bobby C. Billy has worked very hard to make sure that those remains are not disturbed or at least put back exactly where they've taken them from. So, they're not doing those kind of things either willingly. So there has been a long struggle trying to defend the indigenous rights within that city area in St. John's County.
Yeah,
not only that, they're going to act to the Thanksgiving, too, at the same day. I don't know if it's the same day or not, but also they're going to act to begging up our ancestors to show that time, put it on the show with that. So that's good for us.
No, indeed. Seems like it's been a fairly constant struggle in that town for people's rights. I was curious about, as far as the action camp goes, I noticed that there, as part of the like daily routine of the camp, there's a closing circle that is going to close out the events of the day. I was wondering what kind of space you guys were hoping that would be. Is it going to be like a cultural space that's going to be held, or will it be a planning focused space or something else?
Traditionally, at least when Bobby Billy has had an initiative to bring people together for whatever reason, for different protests, for the saving of a certain river, or as we're working with now, the River of Grass Creamway. We just finished a walk a couple of months ago, a 76-mile walk across Big Cypress National Preserve and Everglades area to protect that area from any what is going to happen there, which is also very inappropriate. But at the end of the day, after we had our meal, we sat in a circle, and we had a big fire in the middle, and it was usually opened up by Bobby C. Billy doing a prayer, and then each person had an opportunity to speak and to tell how they felt about the day, how they felt about what had occurred. And then usually someone would say a closing prayer, another indigenous person said a closing prayer. So I suspect that's what will occur, something similar to that.
Cool. That sounds like a really nice way to, or a really fitting way perhaps to close out a day of this kind of struggle.
In our way, we don't close a circle, and we just say will continue our life, but that we always live and live it to that. Because when the people take closing ceremony, in our way of life, in the beginning of creation, we never close it. We always do in the open of saying what we have left. So the so-called that, like, for instance, like protest, it's not to challenge the people. It's just to try to bring the harmony to each other. And when they go out, they're trying to heal people. It's not aggressive against the people. That's how the God was, trying to bring the peace people together and hold hands, loving each other. That's what the God was. So that's what our way of life, teaching people in relationship to all creation of life, which is all types of people. So we're not about the killing and making weapons and all of those things. It's not who we are. It's not what we're supposed to be as a human being. So the people become animals, to killing each other. And you have to become as a human being, like I said before. So this is what indigenous people, they believe in their way of life is. So that's what we're trying to pass it on to people.
For sure. And in addition, perhaps, for solidarity building, seems like it would be a really good thing. On the note of the action camp, I did want to ask if you have any requests or suggestions for any non-Indigenous attendees of the action camp as far as their conduct goes. Is there things that you would urge people to keep in mind as far as being respectful?
That's what the statement they put it on the website and explain to the how this camp's going to be about the protest.
I just think that people should come in mind with a heart and a willingness to engage in solidarity and unity, and let us allow the changes that need to happen in St. Augustine occur in a peaceful manner. That will bring change in the right course of things. If we go in and challenge and push and yell and scream and be disrespectful, we're joining their side. That's who they are. We want to come in with a respectful manner, unwavering, stand strong in unity and solidarity. That is the kind of protest we're hoping for and demonstration. It can be done, and it will bring about, again, as I said, the change that needs to take place and help them make the changes that need to take place in their lives as well. So we'll be posting more on the website, a little bit more in detail about where the camp is going to be. And I think our mission statement pretty well reflects our purpose also. And it's posted on the 450 at resist450.org also.
Cool. Thank you for those words. How can people who cannot attend the action camp help out? And is there a source where people can find more information?
I think if they just turn to resist450.org and write. I will have to put something on the website to accommodate that, where people who can't attend will be able to assist in any way. It's certainly to write to the city and to the mayor, but I will provide that on the website. Thank you for bringing that up.
Oh, hey, no problem. Do you all need funds or money or supplies or anything like that?
We do. I know that there will be a few people traveling afar to get there. We also need help in paying for the camp itself. We have to pay the fees and gas and so forth, and we need a bus. We need to rent a bus to get the people from the camp into St. Augustine, but Spirit Foundation in Illinois is setting up a way to receive funds. They have been doing this for other organizations. They're a long-standing group or organization. They are 501c as well. So we have asked them to be the ones to receive the money so that everyone can be assured that it is accountable for. And all we have to do then is ask for, you know, what our needs are, and it will be turned over to us. And I can get that on the website as well.
And that's resist450.org.
Yes.
Cool.
Uh-huh.
Thank you both, Shannon Larson and Bobby C. Billy, so much for coming onto The Final Straw.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank Likewise. You again.
We've been speaking with Shannon Larson and Bobby C. Billy about the Resist 450 Coalition and Action Camp, which will be occurring in St. Augustine, Florida on September 5th through 8th of this year. If you're just tuning in, the Resist 450 Coalition is protesting some pretty gruesome events put on by the city of St. Augustine to commemorate the colonization of that city by Pedro Menendez and Juan Ponce de Leon. Shannon Larson informs me that there is now a support/donate button on resist450.org for those listeners who would like to help out but cannot attend the action camp. On that website, you can also see information pertaining to the coalition and how to get involved with the action camp, a proposed timetable, and logistics for travel. And now for an interview by A-Radio Berlin with a member of Reclaim the Fields in North Wales. Enjoy.
Sagen Sie jetzt mal bitte
Anarchie.
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 Ob geschichtlich oder brandaktuell.
Mit Berichten und Interviews, mit Beiträgen und Collagen
beleuchtet das anarchistische Radio Berlin das Phänomen des Anarchismus.
Viva Anarchia!
In the following interview we made with an UK-based organizer from the Reclaim the Fields initiative, we talk about the planned international camp in North Wales, the relationship of food sovereignty in the prison system, and the topic of prison abolition as such.
I'm here with an organizer of the European-wide Reclaims the Fields initiative, and we will talk about the camp you are planning, but first off, we would like to know a bit more about the initiative. Maybe you could tell us something about that.
Yeah, so Reclaim the Fields is like an international network of collective projects and individuals of people who are involved in reclaiming food production. So we're explicitly anti-capitalist, and we try to combine food growing and struggles for access to land and food sovereignty with, you know, other forms of political resistance and solidarity. So we've been going since, well, for the last 10 years. We've had multiple gatherings and camps all over Europe, mainly Western Europe, but increasingly more into the East. People are involved in their own collective projects. So this might be a small squatted farm or a community garden. And generally we organize in countries and have our own smaller gatherings as well. And we sort of provide solidarity when we're in trouble. So say someone is facing eviction, then many people will come and work with them. And it's really nice for people who are living in the countryside, for example, and are isolated to come together with like politically like-minded people who share the same passions for kind of, yeah, I guess, social justice and food growing.
Well, now for the end of August, you're planning an international action camp. This sounds quite interesting. When will it be and what will it be about?
Yeah, so it's from the 28th of August, so Friday, until the 2nd of September. And the aim is to bring people together from all over Europe to support communities in the northwest of the UK and North Wales to fight this new mega prison which is being built, which I'll talk about shortly. But the aim of the camp is to have 3 days of workshops and skill shares, discussions, you know, activities with families, and then to have 2 days solid of different actions undertaken by affinity groups against the prison. And it's, yeah, we're camping at a anti-fracking site. So in the UK, where they want to do like fracking for gas, often communities will organise like protection camps to defend the land. So we will be at Boris Community Protection Camp, which is a small new camp that really needs support, and they're fighting like unconventional gas drilling in that area. They have many developments kind of imposed on them, so this is our way of giving solidarity. It's going to be really great, and it's going to be really important because the UK government is really interested in prison expansion, and this is a really visible show of resistance. There's going to be lots of ex-prisoners there and talks by ex-prisoners and various workshops about, you know, ideas around prison abolition and transformative justice. And hopefully we will make this struggle more well known in the UK.
It sounds quite interesting to combine these topics of food sovereignty and, in this case, prison system? How come?
So we feel they are really, really linked. You know, the prison industry in the UK, which some people call the prison industrial complex, is really linked to the kind of birth of like industrial agriculture and how capitalism makes us use the land. For example, one woman from the community who have been fighting the prison, she can remember when the land was farmland before it became industry. You know, so we've seen these huge changes in land use, which have been motivated by capitalism and by the accumulation of wealth, that now this kind of new pioneering edge is the prison system. So they are profiting from exploitation of prisoners, from caging human beings who, especially in the UK, are mainly working class, people of colour, queer people, immigrants, the disabled, people with mental health problems. And now it's a really profitable industry. The UK has the most privatised prison system in the whole of Europe, for example. So this camp is a way of showing resistance to this, that we will not be imprisoned, especially not for profit.
And do prisoners actually work in the fields also?
Not so much in the UK. There are a few, like maybe smaller horticultural projects. However, there are two large workshops, kind of like mini factories, where they will be employing over 800 prisoners to work for local companies. And they've sold this to the area as, you know, the prison will bring so many economic benefits, because actually the prisoners are being paid maybe £7 a week or something, which is not even the national minimum wage for 1 hour, you know, in the UK.
Can you tell us more specifics also about this special prison project? You said before it is the second biggest project.
It doesn't have a name yet, but it's in Wrexham, which is a small town in North Wales. It will hold more than 2,100 prisoners. It will be run publicly, so it won't be run by a private company. However, one third of all the contracts will go to private companies. So still, these companies will make like huge amounts of money from this prison. Some local people have been asking for a local prison for their community, which is, but not real local people, but local power holders, you know, local councillors and MPs have been asking for this. However, in North Wales last year, there was only, I think, maybe 700 people who went to prison in total. So, you know, it's a total lie that this prison is for Welsh people as a local prison. You know, it's an absolutely huge mega prison that will most likely target kind of poor communities in the northwest of the UK, like Liverpool and Manchester. So at the moment, they already have planning permission and they are building at the site as we speak. A campaign has been fighting against them as well to try and, I guess, encourage companies to drop the project and not work with them. So people are targeting the construction company, who are called Lendlease, an Australian multinational building firm, and other smaller companies locally who are profiting from building the prison. But it's just one prison as part of the UK government's plans to build more. So we feel it's really important that there's active resistance to it. And even if we don't stop it, we can show the government that prison building is not okay and we will not tolerate it.
Okay, so to come to a more general topic, yeah, anarchists are completely against the prison system as such, but many non-anarchists might not know why or might think, well, there are some cases where maybe. Could you reply something to that or explain?
Yeah, prisons are really interesting, and when I often help do workshops to help people understand about prisons, and I ask them for their first memory of prison in their life, you know, maybe it's in a Disney film or a TV show or something like this. But we can really see when we do this exercise what the function of the prison system is in terms of basically controlling resistance and also intimidating like poor communities and now increasingly profiting from them. So prisons are sold as a way that we can solve social and economic problems. You know, if there is, say, crime in an area, we don't want to get to the root cause of this, which might be like poverty or inequalities of wealth. So instead, we are sold that prisons will keep us safe and that the state can punish people for us and that this is totally natural, normal and necessary. So when we introduce ideas like prison abolition, what we're really doing is, in a way, we're not even talking about prisons at all. We're saying, okay, how can we look after each other without this violence of putting someone in a cage? You know, how can we deal with harm? How can we challenge like the inequalities caused by capitalism and the state? You know, do we need prisons to solve these problems and will they ever solve them? So this is, yeah, these are the ideas we challenge. But yeah, so I guess the premise is that prisons don't solve problems. They don't get to the root causes of why people are hurting each other, you know, and they especially don't challenge things which are systematic, like patriarchy, for example. You know, if a man has raped someone, at the moment, it doesn't work that they go to prison because it doesn't meet the needs of the survivor. Most survivors experience like really disempowering experiences interacting with the police and the courts, you know, being told they're liars and it's not their fault, la la la. So it doesn't meet their needs. It doesn't make them feel safer. And this man then goes to a prison, which is a highly violent, sexist environment where people openly talk about who they will rape when they get out, you know, for example. So yeah, it's not going to transform this person who is raped. It's not going to change the culture which has created a rape culture. You know, it's not going to challenge the root causes of patriarchy. So really, it's ineffective. And the survivor is often, you know, also harmed by this process. So, you know, we're not saying there's answers to all of these. You know, they're really complex issues. But we feel like it's up to communities to decide how they will deal with harm and how they will work for accountability. And this is really difficult, obviously, because we're so kind of atomized by our economic system. You know, most people don't have a community. However, I think as anarchists, we can commit to building these infrastructures now and exploring different ways to deal with harm without calling the police, for example. So prison abolition is as much about fighting prison expansion as is about working for kind of ways to keep each other safe and build like healthy environments and healthy areas for us. So this is why it's really connected to food growing, because, you know, access to land to be able to kind of reproduce and to be able to, you know, meet our needs autonomously, this is really, really essential to creating a society where we don't need prisons. Well, we don't need them now, but, you know, really working for a society, that level of change that we need, I feel like food is a huge connector in that. Everyone has to eat. It's our basic need. So finding like radical, small scale, real needs orientated ways of producing food in like collective, empowering, horizontal ways, this can really lay the foundations, but build the soil for a totally new way of living. But if we don't challenge things like prisons now, then we will just reproduce these dynamics, you know, and this desire to punish and to, yeah, depend on the state to deal with harm. So we feel it's going to be a really exciting mix of people who are passionate about food growing and maybe anti-prison. And hopefully everyone at the camp will come with some knowledge and some experience thinking about these things in their life. And we'll hopefully create some really interesting conversations.
You already mentioned the concept of transformative justice, for example, that will be talked about in a workshop. Where can people who got interested by this interview or otherwise get more information about the camp and know how to get there?
Yeah, so all the information about workshops and programs and practical logistics can be found at reclaimthefields.org.uk. And we also want to say it is an international camp. There will be translation collective, and we really encourage people to contact us who want to contribute to the program. You know, we'd really love to hear about anti-prison struggles or food growing struggles in Germany, for example. The camp is only going to be what it is, you know, for everyone. And also on the days of action, the Tuesday and the Wednesday, we also really support decentralized actions to happen. So if you can't come to the camp, but you'd like to fight against this prison and the harm it will cause communities for, you know, 100 years to come at least, then, you know, there's details again on the website with links to different companies involved and materials to download. So hopefully, you know, we could have resistance to this prison everywhere.
Perfect. Many thanks for that.
Thank
you're
you.
You're listening to WSFM 103.3 in Asheville, North Carolina. This is the final straw. Numbers
and I'm William Goodenough.
The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRSLP in Columbus, Ohio, as well as Berkeley Liberation Radio in Berkeley, California. Next up is Onward Through the Fog with Jake. Stay tuned for some relaxing beats for your Sunday afternoon.